on APA Compass, we will focus on the Sensenbrenner bill and how this anti-immigrant legislation will affect APA communities. Also, we will talk to the filmmakers and volunteers who made Disorient, the first Asian American film festival of Oregon, such a huge success. Tune in at 9 a.m. on Friday, March 3rd for APA Compass.
Time for KVU's Spring Membership Drive. If you're able to give a gift of at least $500, consider doubling your money by sponsoring a matching challenge pledge during the drive. You can offer to match every gift during the show of your choice up to the amount you choose. This is a great way to motivate others so we can reach our goal and wrap up the drive early. If you're interested, please contact KVU's Membership Coordinator. You can email membership@kvu.org or call 503-231-8032, extension 207. This spring, KVU wants to connect you by offering you the opportunity to win your choice of a brand new desktop or laptop computer with a full year of internet service donated by Spirit One. Check your mailbox for the entry form to win KVU's 2006 Spring Sweepstakes. It's free, it's easy, but you have to enter to win. The deadline for entry is Friday, March 24th at 5 p.m. The winner will be announced on air Saturday, March 25th at noon. If you haven't already received your entry form in the mail, please contact KVU's membership department. Email membership@kvu.org or call 503-231-8032, extension 207.
This KVU program has been made possible in part by KVU Foundation members and a grant from Ambling Bear Distributor, which distributes recycled free periodicals.
And this is APA Compass, your Asian Pacific American orientation. Streaming live, first Friday of the month on www.kvu.fm. Check out our website at apacompass.org. Today, we take a hard look at historical and pending anti-immigration policy. What does it all mean for Asian America? Later, during our roundtable, we'll be taking your calls live at 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. And we're featuring spoken word talents, I Was Born With Two Tongues, and Ishal Park, plus conscious music from the hip-hop crew, Nostalgic Progression, and, as always, Angry Asian Minute. But first, we'll hear from the filmmakers and audience at the Disorient Film Festival.
Marie Lowe.
I'm Patty Sakurai.
And we've just come up to the Disorient Asian American Film Festival of Oregon, and we had the pleasure of talking to some of the people here trying to promote and celebrate Asian American film.
Misa Joe. Disorient Film Festival is really an exciting thing for our town because it's the first time anything like this has happened. It's important to get Asian American voices and their stories out there in a powerful way. Plus, the leadership for the Disorient Film Festival are the youth, the new young leaders, and they are doing such a class job that it's really exciting to see their vision, and this is their vision, come true.
My name's Nadia Raza. What led me to get involved was kind of creating a space within Asian Celebration for people to listen to stories and get kind of a more in-depth and heartful experience. The films cover such a wide range of issues, everything from social justice to gender and sexuality, also internment history, which is really specific to Eugene. And so for me, I mean, each one of the films really provides kind of a voice that you normally wouldn't hear. And it's just really an incredible opportunity to engage in that process of supporting independent film and learning about, you know, stories which are really our stories.
Jason Mack, and I'm the executive director of Disorient Asian American Film Festival of Oregon. The response has been so positive. I am so amazed. I think it's really important because, hey, you know, the multiplex isn't going to show films like this. And so if we're going to show and honor our artists in our community, we got to take it into our own hands. We got to do the film festivals. We got to be the distributors. We got to hold that power. And, you know, this is just one of those things in that process.
Okay, my name is Christy Leung, and I was the PR coordinator for this film festival. We chose the name Disorient because, you know, we want to disorient ourselves from, you know, stereotypical, just stereotypes of Asians. A lot of people strolling through here have asked me, well, are these films in subtitles? And I have to remind them, these are Asian American films. And they say, so are they foreign? No, they're Asian American. Are they kung fu movies? I was like, no, there aren't any kung fu movies, sorry. You know, we're not trying to entertain you that way. So they're films that are made by Asian American directors or filmmakers, or they're honest portrayals of how we really are as Asian Americans.
My name is Alicia Miao. For this being our first year, we got an amazing amount of submissions of really quality films. I chose to get involved in this because you don't see a lot of Asian American events in Oregon. And I thought this was a really great way to get honest portrayals of Asian Americans out there and also to be able to support Asian American filmmakers.
W.E. Du Bois said, you know, there's three standards: for us, by us, about us. I think if you can meet any of those things, I think it's an Asian American film, right? I don't think you need just all of those things, but it can be any of those things. And I think it's really important because, especially in Oregon, come on, it's Lily White. Let's be real.
Yeah, I would say that Asian American film is not just for Asians. So it's such a broad range of film that it's not necessarily, oh, well, that doesn't, you know, pertain to me, or, you know, that's just for Asian people, because, you know, even the identity of Asian is so incredibly inclusive that in a diaspora, which is Asia, there's just so much to behold. And this is really about the American experience as well. So I think it speaks directly to many, many people within the United States that are connected with Asian culture, even connected with struggles around identity, social justice, empowerment, and just finding a space in our culture.
We just got out of the screening for a set of films that address the Japanese American World War II internment, and we're talking with Kenji Kobayashi and Bob Kono, both former internees.
Well, I thought that the combination of the films were very reflective and representative of the trials and tribulations that we went through as internees, and I thought it gave a pretty good overview of the experience.
I'm glad the film's major thing about, for one thing, how important the U.S. Constitution is, you know, and by interning us, it was unconstitutional, really. So I'm glad this film brought that out, you know. Thank you.
Well, I hope that people who view the films come away with the idea that something like this shouldn't have happened and should never happen again and should never be condoned.
Michael Somino, I would hope that younger people, what they might be able to get out of it is that at no time should we ever let our guard down. I mean, we have to be vigilant when it comes to our freedoms, and in those times, historical times, when our freedoms are most challenged, that's not when we just hand over our freedoms to the government and say, yeah, sure, and, you know, we're in war, so now you can do everything you want to me. I mean, those are the times that we most have to challenge and say no.
Well, I hope that people will get the idea that the Asian American experience, one, is rooted here, and two, that it is very diverse, that you can't put anything in a box, that it is more than two or three groups, immigration groups, more than two or three issues, that it is human, like playful and deep and grieving and celebration, everything. So that's what I'm hoping, that things will be seen through our perspective, our many perspectives.
My name is Becky Lin. The responses I've been getting are very positive. They loved the opening night. It was really successful, and a lot of people showed up of all ages. Yeah, I'm just hoping that this will be even bigger next year, not just for the turnout, but just for people to be actually interested in watching these films, because there's some brainless, really stupid movies in the mainstream Hollywood, and they're missing out on like great quality movies such as these.
Most people are interested in the Grace Lee Project. We have the poster over there. The Grace Lee Project is directed by Grace Lee. She's a Korean-American filmmaker, and she actually seeks out other Grace Lees throughout the country and kind of documents them, and she learns that she kind of has a stereotype of Grace Lee. She thinks they're, you know, they're quiet, they play an instrument, just a stereotype of a typical Asian-American female, and she finds out there's all these other Grace Lees out there with who lead completely different lifestyles. I think some of them are, you know, white. I was like, that's not a Grace Lee, right? I think we've all known a Grace Lee out there, so.
And right now I'm about to go into my own screening, and I'm getting kind of nervous. Mine is, you know, sort of a personal documentary on growing up in a Chinese restaurant and tracing my family genealogy through the restaurant business. And, you know, because I'm Chinese, it kind of happened that way. But it's amazing. I've screened it all over the country at different Asian American film festivals, and that's actually how I wanted to do one here, because I had screened my own doc everywhere else except for Eugene, Oregon, where it's about.
All right. My name is Chiang Wing. I'm 17. I go to Springfield High School, and I got involved in this through Jason again, because, I mean, it's just like, he just really showed me, like, the power of that films can have. And then he gave us a preview of all the films, and just, they're just really powerful stories that, you know, you wouldn't really see in, like, the big screen cinema, you know, because they're not made for profit. They're made to tell a story. And I think it's so important to have, like, a venue and encourage people to come see the shows. And it's just like, I felt like some of the movies, like, if you could just see it, you would understand so much better about, like, just, like, understand about who, like, the face behind, like, the people behind the stereotype. It's just so important. I'm so glad I got a chance to be a part of it. But my film that was featured in this Orient is Smells Like Fish Sauce, and I did it as a mock infomercial on fish sauce. It has to do with how, like, there are films when people, like, would, like, point out, like, the foods of other countries and, like, oh, look what they're eating, you know, it's so weird. And, I just took the idea and just had fun to it, show people, you know, that's just really silly. And it was just an idea to, like, also, like, introduce fish sauce, because that's such a, I'm Vietnamese, and so, you know, you eat it all the time, and it's just a fun way of, like, introducing it to people.
I'm trying to create the stuff that I want to see, right? I want to create those things that I wish I had the chance to see when I was a kid, right? And so, you know, how do we represent ourselves, I think, is the main issue. And it looks like people are starting to arrive for the screening, so I think I better get in there.
Slip skins on the thought of what is to be, pressing prayer and whisper, a litany, and I wish for the right words that make sense in a less than that world. Words. Every morning at the living room table for 15 years, my papa lettered boxes, filled the squares in the Sun-Times and Tribune crosswords, back in the pages where family circle comics mingled with word jumbles and crisscrossed. He would always sift swiftly through the front page headlines and bypass the bylines. He would always sit there until he got every last word. He always did. And sometimes with a little help from me, a knock. What's a four-letter word that goes with horseshoe? Toss, I said. A seven-letter word that goes with counter? Culture, I said. We toss culture with words. Every morning for 15 years, he created a brew. Mixed Sanka with syntax, American common knowledge with coffee. My mother told me later, they have a habit of always telling you so damn later, that when he first came here in 1969, he worked as a bellhop at the Palmer House. She said his accent was so thick, and he being so tongue-tied, they laughed him clear out of the lobby, out of the graveyard shift, into a living room table, into a dictionary, into the back of a newspaper, into a crossword puzzle. A knock. What's a four-letter word for to hit the snag? Slip, I said. Maybe trip, I said. Sometimes fall over words. One morning at the corner store, my father's buying lotto tickets. Some guy in line shoves him over and says, "Oh, so, the Jap wants to buy a lotto ticket. Don't you think you already bought everything, you greedy Japs?" The more refined, acculturated sidekick of his adds, "He's not a Jap, stupid, look at him. He must be a Rican chink mutt or something. So what if it's spick? What the fuck you need to buy a lotto ticket for? Ain't you got it all? Our jobs? Our country?" And I wanted my papa to bust out collie sticks and slice them clear into Bridgeport, pull out every last four-letter word in the book to accent his revenge, tell him our family history, pull a gun, a sarcastic one-liner, throw a punch, a yop, the visa papers, the 5 years of pictures he sent mama while he petitioned for us, a scream, our home, his union card, my good English, poetic license, something, anything to prove. A single word. Nothing. He grabbed his tickets, said nothing, walked briskly back to the house, opened his newspaper, picked a ballpoint pen out of his pocket, said nothing, except a sigh, and then a tear. On crumpling newspaper, his fist to the table, he cried for everything that day, for every failure, for every mispronounced syllable, for me, without words.
Asians and Pacific Islanders have had a long history and presence in the United States.
According to the 2000 census, the Asian American population now makes up 4.3%, almost 12 million of 298 million people in the U.S. Between 1990 and 2000, the APA growth rate was the fastest of any racial group at 63%. Despite successful growth and integration into American society, Asian and Pacific Americans maintain a foreignness in a country we helped build. Beginning in the 1600s, when Chinese and Filipinos arrived in the Americas via trade ships to present-day migration into the U.S., Asian and Pacific Americans have come in search of a better way of life, much like their European, Latino, and African counterparts. For all immigrants, the lure of new opportunities perpetuates the idealism of the American dream. But in reality, we know that the migration of people is not so simple. People find themselves displaced by war, political, social, and/or economic instabilities that become so overwhelming that uprooting families and communities is a viable option for survival. Since its inception, the U.S. has relied hugely on the migration of labor from outside its borders, beginning with the forced labor of African slaves to numerous generations of the low-wage labor of workers from China, the Philippines, Japan, Korea, Ireland, Mexico, among many other countries. The United States immigration and civil rights policies have almost consistently worked to maintain control for the white establishment of U.S. society. We saw first that the Chinese, then the Japanese, Filipinos, Koreans, Southeast Asians, and now South Asians and Muslim Asians have experienced growing anti-Asian sentiment as these populations have entered the country. From laws like the Chinese Exclusion Act, which prohibited Chinese laborers from gaining entry, to a number of Supreme Court rulings that prevented Chinese women to reunite with their husbands and Japanese and Korean workers from entering the country, immigration policy has sent the message to those of Asian descent that the U.S. will gladly take your labor, but don't stay.
I came to know that in many ways it was a crime to be a Filipino in California. I came to know that the public streets were not free to my people. We were stopped each time these vigilante patrolmen saw us driving in a car. We were suspect each time we were seen with a white woman. And perhaps it was this narrowing of our life into an island, into a filthy segment of American society that had driven Filipinos inward, hating everyone and despising all positive urgencies toward freedom. Carlos Bulosan, America is in the Heart.
During World War II, the U.S. again displaces racially based xenophobia by ordering over 120,000 Japanese Americans into internment camps, fearing collaboration with Axis powers. Yuri Kochiyama, a longtime civil rights activist, recalls her experiences as a young girl at the time.
We were sent to the camp, and strangely, most Americans didn't even realize what was happening. And yet, our life changed. It was such a change from living in a home that we had been living in for so long, and then being ousted from our home into first an assembly center and then into a concentration camp, either way out in the desert or in the salt flats like Utah or in the forest like in Arkansas, and of course deserts like in Poston and Gila. There were 10 such camps, and there were 10,000 in each, and about 120,000 people of Japanese ancestry, or they were mixed. I mean, there were Japanese, Chinese, very few, but there were, in Southern Cal, there were Japanese-Mexican mixtures, and even white and Japanese.
Beginning in 1975 and throughout the 90s, the entry of large numbers of Southeast Asians as a result of U.S. foreign policies in that region, Asian America has grown to include Vietnamese, Cambodian, Hmong, Mien, Lao, Thai, and many ethnic Chinese from those countries, as well as more recent sizable numbers of South Asians, Muslim Asians, and Pacific Islanders in search of work. Upon entry, each community has experienced institutional discrimination in schools, hospitals, at job sites, and in housing. It wasn't until the Bush senior administration did the U.S. government admit publicly that internment and racially profiling its own citizens did more harm than good. Since 2001 and the inception of the USA Patriot Act, we've seen a conscious trend in U.S. immigration policies to maximize their ability to monitor, curtail entry, detain, and deport immigrants of any nationality, all in the name of national security. In 2002, the U.S. government demanded a special registration for men from 25 different Arab, Muslim, and South Asian countries, or be deported, at the same time as creating a centralized database for immigration and law enforcement. These actions culminated in the decision to hand over responsibility for all immigration enforcement and security to the Department of Homeland Security. Immigration is now in the national spotlight. This March, Congress will begin debating and setting new immigration policy in the U.S. We have the opportunity to learn from this history and act more justly, respecting the many cultures that have come to help create this country. According to census projections, by 2050, no single ethnic or racial group will have a majority in the United States. One can only speculate how this impending statistical reality will change race relations in the future. Although there is a sense of fear and misunderstanding from the American public and policymakers, since we see such aggressive legislation against the very people who have kept the American dream alive. Good morning and welcome to APA Compass. This is KBOO 90.7 FM. And today we're talking about immigration issues as they relate to Asian and Pacific American communities. Today we have a wonderful guest. Please welcome Alice Perry from the American Friends Service Committee, who works both to effect positive immigration reform at the policy level as well as to directly with immigrants nationwide to help develop their own voice here in the U.S. Welcome.
Thanks, Pam. I'm happy to be here.
And just quickly, first, before we go straight into our conversation, just remember at 10, one of the organizers of this year's International Women's Day celebration will tell us about what is lined up for Sunday at Portland State. So welcome, Alice. And first, I guess the question would be, especially if we're talking about as immigration policy relates to all immigrants, what kind of legislation are we going to be seeing in March?
Well, we're going to be seeing a lot of legislation that actually some has been introduced before and has carried forward, and some has just been introduced as early as last week. We're both seeing some, from our perspective, some positive immigration legislation and also some legislation which we feel is very negative and very destructive, not only for immigrants, but also for our society as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Are there any specific bills that we're talking about, or is it general legislation?
There are some specific bills. I think the ones that people are talking about most currently are the Sensenbrenner bill, as it's called, H.R. 4437, or the long name for that is the Border Protection, Anti-Terrorism, Illegal Immigration Control Act of 2005. It is a very large bill, some 200 pages, that whips through the House in literally 10 days in December of 2005. It is extremely harsh and punitive and would criminalize undocumented immigrants in this country and would also criminalize anybody who helps undocumented immigrants, whether or not they're aware of the person's status. Those are only two provisions of 1,310 sections of this bill that passed the House in December.
Mm-hmm. So we've been hearing a lot about this particular bill here on KBOO in the recent week. And
a lot of people think that Asians really don't have to worry about this question of documentation because they've either come here legally or, you know, they've come as workers or refugees. What is the reality of what Asians have to deal with here as immigrants in this country?
Well, I think, first of all, I think, you know, while there may be some historical reality, some of those questions, I think there's also misperceptions. I think that not every Asian immigrant is probably in this country in a legal status. I think people have sometimes come here as refugees, but at some point that ends, or asylees, at some point that ends, and so it puts them in a precarious position. I think also with Sensenbrenner, whether or not you have residency, there's also provisions that if you do have residency, would make it harder for you to become a citizen. And if you're waiting to become a resident, it would make it harder for you to actually become a legal permanent resident. It makes the bar much higher, and in some ways, absurdly higher.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like also there's different levels of security enhancement for the country.
There is. I mean, this is largely, apart from the part that criminalizes immigrants, and that's overall the tone of this bill, it's really criminalizing more than 11 million people, because we're not just talking about immigrants, we're talking about anybody who through charity or goodwill or through their work might be in the position of aiding an undocumented worker into a criminal status. But it also makes it, you know, much more difficult for asylees to gain status. And it makes it, for example, if you're fleeing from a country where you're being persecuted, mm-hmm. this bill, if passed into law, would make it mandatory for this country to report to that home country's consulate, even though you might have family members in your home country that would be in extreme danger mm-hmm. because of that reporting. So those are some of the provisions that we're also seeing in this bill.
Yeah, and it almost seems like as well the question of the border control, increasing surveillance, and those questions, like all of this isn't just happening in a vacuum, right?
No, I think after 9/11, I mean, I think the linking of terrorism with mm-hmm. the word immigrant, we've seen that, you know, since 9/11, that's mm-hmm. been a repeated strategy, I think, mm-hmm. on the part of more conservative people mm-hmm. in this country and more conservative members of Congress. But the reality is an enforcement-only strategy, or even an enforcement-mainly strategy, has not worked for this country.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, we already spend more than $1.4 billion on militarism of our southern border, and it hasn't worked. And it hasn't worked for many reasons. Mm-hmm. It hasn't worked because some of our other policies, like NAFTA, which are economic policies that cause people to be uprooted from their home country for economic reasons, at the same time are pushing the very migration that mm-hmm. we're building walls to stop.
Yeah, and we're also hearing, I know that people have made already connections or claiming that there are Al-Qaeda connections in Latin America as a way to encourage this building of the southern border as well. Have you, are you guys reacting to that in your organizing?
You know, we're really not focusing that on that so much. We're really talking about, let's look at what are the forces that are driving migration. Let's look at mm-hmm. Changing those. Let's look at really addressing why people migrate. Let's look at the reality of our economic system here that is also calling for the very immigrants to be part of the labor force that then we are rejecting and trying to turn into an underclass in the society. Ironically, when you are creating an underclass that's going to go into hiding, you're creating more of a problem for finding those few terrorists that are going to be out
yeah.
there, because you're going to have people in hiding.
Yeah. What does that do you think to the overall security of our country then? I mean, that sounds like if you are creating an underclass as well as people who are being covert and hiding from authorities and not necessarily participating fully in our communities, then, and that just seems to me like it does create a lot of tension throughout our country.
There is a lot of tension. There's a lot of fear, and there's a lot of fear not only because of things like 9/11, which was very real. I mean, we don't want to like underplay the hurt and the devastation that brought. But we also are trying to define the question of what is security. We think that a lot of people are really feeling lack of security for economic reasons, for lack of health care, lack of jobs, lack of, you know, knowing their neighbor. Well, causing people to fear each other is not going to help that situation. Yeah. And the reality is that, you know, we believe that immigrants are in many cases being scapegoated for economic policies that perhaps would be better addressed at looking where our money is going, what our money is going for.
Yeah.
We're spending billions and billions of dollars on a war that will seemingly have no end. And at the same time, you know, taking money away from education, taking money away from healthcare, taking money away from many of the things that would actually help build a secure America.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I think it's a good time to check in with our callers. You can go ahead and give us a call at 231-8187. Please join us. But I'd like to actually ask Alice this question of how we heard that a couple of years ago there began a special registration of particularly people who identify as within the Muslim faith, and that encompassed people from Arab countries as well as Middle Eastern countries and South Asian countries. Do you have a sense of where that's going and what's happening with those particular, that type of registration and database?
Well, you know, as with many things, something is big news when it first happens, and then it fades off into oblivion in terms of the media. People are still in detention. I think there's been a backing off of having that initial rush of having people show up for registration and then be detained. I think immigrant advocate lawyers rushed to let people know what their rights were and tried to get some administrative policy changes in that. But I think the underlying thing of that is, again, it's under the guise of protecting our country, it's creating this this fear of these people, by virtue of their religion or their ethnicities, are to be feared. And we saw the same thing in, well, Yuri Kochiyama was talking about that in terms of the Japanese internment. We saw the same thing here in this country in Portland after the Vietnam War, when the refugees came. Even though the refugees that came were from our side in the war, there was an extreme amount of aggressive, ugly, vitriolent racist actions towards a lot of those refugees. So it's complicated because immigration laws are complicated, and it's further complicated by its immigration plus a sort of cultural fears and what it means to be an American. And I think in the piece before, it was very nicely put, you know, immigrants from whatever country, Germany, Ireland, Asia, Latin America, have all helped build this country, as well as native people here. And we are all a part of what has defined this country.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Are we just checking in again? If you'd like to call, you can call at 231-8187. We know that there's been quite a buzz about this topic for callers, and I know a lot of you listeners out there are very interested in this topic. But just actually, there is something that folks can do if they're interested in getting more involved. Is there anything else?
Well, there is. We want people to be calling their senators. In particular, the Senate is taking up immigration reform starting this week and through March 27th. What we hear is that by March 27th, there should be a bill coming out of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And if there's not, one of the senators, Senate Majority Leader First, will be putting in his own immigration bill to go directly to the Senate floor.
Okay. So we have a couple of callers. We'll take the first, and then we can give more information about how you can contact your senators. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Great topic. I have worked in a number of vocal employment settings, and it seems as though the immigrant populations have such a great work ethic and less turnover when I've had to employ groups of people before. And it seems like we're largely deferring a lot of our decisions back to economics and industry, and it seems to me that the immigrant population is really coveted among a certain group of employers, and that's what's drawing a huge amount of people here and giving them a community and places to be. And I think there's a huge need to have legitimate ways people can come here and join us and help us do what we're doing here in America, which is creating viable communities and economy.
Thank you very much, caller. Do you have a response, Alice?
I think that's an excellent point. I believe that, the caller said that there needs to be legitimate ways, and I think that that is what some of the legislation, some of the more positive legislation from our perspective that we see is trying to do. The reality is that there are approximately 11 million undocumented people here already doing a lot of the work that this economy needs. And so,
paying tax dollars that they don't get returns for, is that correct?
Right. Yeah. And rather than criminalize them and penalize them, make felons out of them, deport them, we're saying let's recognize the contributions, economic, cultural, that they have made and figure out a path, both a path to legalization and to citizenship for them.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Alice. We're actually going to close. Oh, we have another caller? Yes, one more caller, and then we can close out. Go ahead, caller.
Kind of jobs that are being filled by this current wave of immigration are jobs that we really don't want to have in our economy. I mean, you look at the fast food industry, you look at these retailers that are selling their low-cost stuff, probably because the overall wage structure of the workers in this country is being driven down precisely because of immigration. I started speaking out and thinking about this issue when I read a memo in 1994. It was right after the Gingrich Republican Congress takeover in the election of 1994, and I was a federal employee at that time, and they circulated a memo amongst the federal employees that they were going to boost immigration and they were going to build this country, or I think they're going to destroy it, but they said that they were going to grow the population up to 500 million. Well, you think about what the Republicans want to achieve. They want to make government dysfunctional. They want to destroy programs. They don't like the environment. They don't like workers making decent money. And I think that the immigration policy is exactly how they're going to achieve that. And as long as there's well-intentioned Americans who haven't had a lot of experience in the workforce and applying for jobs and seeing what's happening to this country at the point of where people are being hired, this country's going to be turned into a gulag.
Well, thank you very much, caller, for your thoughts. We're actually needing to kind of close out. Alice, do you have final thoughts?
Well, the caller raises some good points. However, I think that precisely because he mentioned that some of those very Republican leaders are the same ones that are behind the current Sensenbrenner bill, Cornyn and Kyle, and those very policies that they're pushing not only are anti-immigrant, but they're also anti-environment and anti-worker. And so we don't fix a problem that somebody's created by continuing with their immigration strategies. And so what we're saying is we really need to take a driving hard look at what is pushing immigration and have a real discussion, not a knee-jerk reaction, scapegoating immigrants.
Okay. Thank you very much, Alice. You've been listening to APA Compass, and stay tuned next month when we're on at 9 a.m. First Friday. Thank you.
This story is about two people searching for a home. No, this story is about a country searching for a home. Liberation fighters spilling blood to speak their own words rounded. Whole as the moon-dusted pears that weighed down their orchards. Farmers beating hourglass drums on dirt, cracking their throats in their sweat river backs to call this land Chosun. Son. My father grew up barefoot, ripping skins off trees, kicking leather rugby ball, prying open that locked door to get at the candy and the toy trucks that the GIs left his father. My mother also grew up chasing army trucks for bubblegum and trinkets until she realized that some things are not worth chasing, for bending into the dust. But they bent for each other, in dust, in drinks, with handwritten letters in a language I must mouth to read, their words forming calligrams of love. No, this is not romantic. These are my parents, running with students, rioting and beaten, tanks riding bareback through Seoul. This is about my father, waiting tables at Friendly's, sloppy and loose tongues, the other white boy waiters laughing at his flustered mouth. This is about my mother, picking thorns off roses in a factory with her sister, her fingertips scarred and bleeding. This is about her sister, who brought them all over by marrying a white soldier who became a crazy and then a family secret. Breaking bones of mackerel, croaker, over dinner table, breaking each other, bruised rib, scarred elbow, 25 years selling fish, breaking backs, breaking promises. This is about a daughter, with a suitcase packed with wise onion chips and a moth-eaten blanket, staring into her rice, kimchi flung, kutsu spilt, bowl chipped and thrown. Girl, curled into bunk bed. Girl, grown. Trying to find home in the wild asphalt, rhythms of a bleeding, copter-scarred sky, headlights and searchlights and strobe lights, and him, wire-thin, carved and broken. He was beauty. He broke her open, kissed her hip bones, bruised her jaw. She broke him open, searched the thick cords of his hair, listened to the clave of his heart, punched his chest, tried to leave. His arms a bracelet around her ankles, he refused to let go of the only home he had ever known. And she began to see how we cling to fragile walls, dilapidated roofs, rib-like planks, this first home body grown and pounded of necessity and love. Fire ant love. Survival love. And the girl looked back at her parents, apron-stained, calloused, and graying, and she began to cry. For them, and for her country, ravished, split, and clawing, all for home. And she began to love this leatherback thing she called a heart.
This is APA Compass, and you just heard from Poet Laureate of Queens, New York, Ishil Park. Born and raised in Queens, she's the first Korean-American woman on the National Poetry Slam circuit. Ishil's not the only Asian-Pacific American talent with something to say about immigrant parents or the impact of U.S. military occupation. The Thai-American MC, Mr. Millen, of Nostalgic Progression, wrote a song in response to the war on Afghanistan following 9/11. He thought it was completely ridiculous how Americans were mad to the point of violence at those who wanted peace, of all things. Before it became common rhetoric, Mr. Millen was driven by the idea that to criticize your government is the most patriotic thing you could do. Here's Don't Want, off Nostalgic Progression's first album, produced by Il Dante and Viet American Recluse. Check out www.nospro.com. That's www.nospro.com. for Nostalgic Progression's new album.
Victims of democracy, nothing but disguised hypocrisy.
My hunger search for peace, my country versus me. Sweet land of liberty, a cheap chant of limited. My free chance of living in a real democracy, yet it's still just mocking me when the mayor's talk of freedom that discriminates. Most civilians watch their tears in blood. We watched our fears erupt, they brought our spirits up. Inspired like that, to bring fire right back. Empire strikes back, that'll be the sequel to the morning many claim look like a movie scene. Looks like my duty seems to back up a justice that only lives through brutal means. There is a new share in this view.
terrorists do? And how many are children under a parasite too? Now who's dropping bombs just as killers as who? The big payback, just equip, aim, blast, and fully conquest. Check that bully nonsense and quick change. It gets us nowhere but in debt, exposed when the risks get. Vengeance explodes when this kid's dead. But they did the same to my wife, right? We have no choice, fight with twice, fight right. For revenge, we gonna let more innocent lives die. Your pulse are authorizing drive-bys.
Now that's real gangsta shit.
Sirens, firefighters died for lies to stop the grief igniting. Next morning, watch the morning fleeting silence. Conclusion of events, more war is needed by this. I must be mistaken, what? A sleeping giant, disturbed from his slumber, awaken a breathing tyrant. Concerned with the suffered, they claim to be impious. Had us learned by the numbers, so debating seems defiant. Symbol of worth, with two planes that steeped inside it. Images were played to plan and shape the seeds of riot. And now I seem defiant, cause I want the peace rallies. Well, you wanna see valleys, carved out by warheads. Lives are marked down with more dead on both sides. Ignore it, so old life returns to your cell phone. While she sits in her shack to make herself home. How dare I really be concerned with how to make my wealth grow? Hollow, shallow, when trouble slaps us, we're allowed a muscle tantrum. That's a double standard. You feared us before, so how dare you interfere with my business of interfering in yours? These are my observations. Who can't I share them with? Anti-American? No, I just believe in more. I don't believe in war. Certainly not for revenge. Worded as a call for defense. But options are soft and we're not weak. So they don't want peace. So they don't want peace. They're gonna sacrifice a life and make it cost more. But I don't want war. No, I don't want war. Don't want it. But options are soft and we're not weak. So they don't want peace. So they don't want peace. They're gonna sacrifice a life and make it cost more. But I don't want war. No, I don't want war. Don't want it.
Victims of democracy. Nothing, nothing, nothing but disguised hypocrisy.
Person seems through propaganda, not exclusive to them. We co-authors. If rights to people of all colors is self-evident, then why no precedence, my forefathers? Good versus evil, hypocrites, explanation. If it's then explain when foreign aid nurtures evil. Uncle Sam service people indirectly purchase evil. Now we under God condemn those that worship evil. Convenient, ain't it? Speaking of freedom, saving. 64 when civil rights for colored people came in. Now you want to claim the purity for death, for slaughter roundups? Let's recall it now from separate water foulings to legalize Japanese internment means legalize. Actually deserving, that's what we've decided. Battling a person is people die collateral and purpose. It's repeating, yet you like to know what's the main topic. Just patriotic if you quit to buy a flag for home. Unpatriotic if you criticize the status quo. And yet I criticize for more peace. But FBI tapped Martin's phones and he was for peace. So we got those prepared to bomb and those prepared to talk. Damn, I swear to God, but you tapped me for which one?
But options are soft and we're not weak. So they don't want speech. So they don't want speech. They'd rather sacrifice their life and make it cost more. But I don't want war.
This is the APA Compass Community Calendar. Learn about the growing problem of human trafficking from Vietnam, including migrant workers and brides trafficked to Taiwan and children trafficked to Cambodia. The Reverend Van Hong Nguyen of the Vietnamese Migrant Workers and Brides Office in Taoyuan, Taiwan, will present an in-depth picture of the situation in Taiwan and its relationship to global trafficking. Admission is free and refreshments will be provided. The event is tomorrow, March 4th, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m., Madison High School Cafeteria, 2735 Northeast 82nd Avenue in Portland. For more info, call Tui Quyen, 971-563-2758. Also tomorrow, rally and march for immigrant rights. Respect all workers. No human being is illegal. Saturday, March 4th at noon, Pioneer Courthouse Square. Join immigrant, labor, faith, and ally communities for a mass mobilization against the Border Security and Immigration Enforcement Act, also known as the Sensenbrenner Bill. And on Sunday, join author Lauren Kessler as she reads from and signs her book, Stubborn Twig, Three Generations in the Life of a Japanese-American Family. The factual account chronicles three generations of a Japanese-American family living in Hood River, Oregon, as it copes with anti-Japanese sentiments and the World War II internment of Japanese-Americans. That's happening at 1:30 p.m. at the Oregon Nikkei Legacy Center, 121 Northwest 2nd Avenue, Portland. For more info, call 503-224-1458 or visit www.oregonnikkei.org. On Sunday, March 19th at Waterfront Park, a rally and march to end the war, begin peace for the third anniversary of the invasion of Iraq. The march starts at the south side of the Morrison Bridge at 1:30 p.m. For more info, contact Peace and Justice Works, 503-236-3065 or www.pjw.info. American Association of Retired Persons and the IRS are offering free help for low-income Asian taxpayers. Volunteers fluent in Vietnamese and English will help prepare tax forms. Saturdays through April 8, 1 to 4 p.m. at Southeast Asian Vicariate, La Vang Church, 5404 Northeast Alameda Avenue, Portland. And Sundays through April 9th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Nalk Son Temple, 8318 Southeast Harney Street, Portland. See www.asianreporter.com for a list of information to bring. Click on the Northwest Local link. It's time for another Angry Asian Minute. Here's Afifa Ahmed Shafi.
In Indonesia, in Pakistan, in India, Afghanistan, across the world, people rave about some cartoon printed in Denmark. We're thinking they're so prone to anger, so uncivilized and different from us. They don't appreciate freedom. We have freedom of press. They are so into censorship. I'll tell you what, why are we so angry? Move to riots, violence, even death? Is this about a few lines sketched on Danish newsprint? Is this really about freedom of press? Or is it just one more finger thrust deep into the wounds of our flesh? Every day, everywhere we look, occupation, invasion, you call it liberation. This is not a clash of civilizations. It is not about freedom. It is about the powerful feasting on the weak and building the structure to keep them weak. I mean, yeah, those cartoons were super racist, but that's not the issue. It's about the injustice that is perpetuating, and these folks bear the brunt. It's our tax dollars that fuel the ammunition. We install their corrupt leaders, and when we're done with them, we take them down. When you see the angry crowds in the paper and on TV, they aren't those angry people over there. Next time you see these folks, think about their grief and ask yourself, are you helping to fuel the source?
You've been listening to APA Compass, an Asian Pacific American public affairs program on KBOO, first Friday of the month, 9 to 10 a.m. Also streaming live on the web at www.kbu.fm. Send your comments to apacompass@gmail.com. For more information about Asian Pacific American film, go to the Disorient Asian American Film Festival website, www.disorientfilm.org and asianamericanfilm.com. Special thanks to our in-studio panelists and our interviewees at the Disorient Asian American Film Festival. APA Compass is engineered and produced by APA Compass Collective. This month's executive producer, Wes Wong. Audio archives are available at our website, www.apacompass.org.
You put the curly bush on your head, baby. You know you're looking good.
It's 10:30. This is KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Coming up on this morning on KBOO, at 10, one of the organizers of the year's International Women's Day celebration will tell us what's lined up for Sunday at Portland State. At 10:30, Sounds of Awareness. The topic is psychological challenges of being the parent of a child with disabilities. And at 11, on Democracy Now!, author and activist Arundhati Roy talks about Bush's visit to India and activists review the response to the Katrina disaster 6 months later.
This spring, KB wants to connect you by offering you the opportunity to win your choice of a brand new desktop or laptop computer with a full year of internet service donated by Spirit One. Check your mailbox for the entry form to win KBOO's 2006 Spring Sweepstakes. It's free, it's easy, but you have to enter to win. The deadline for entry is Friday, March 24th at 5 p.m. The winner will be announced on air Saturday, March 25th at noon. If you haven't already received your entry form in the mail, please contact KBOO's membership department. Email membership at kboo.org or call 503-231-8032, extension 207.